Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. On this Counselor Audio Source podcast, Dr. Tammy Schaefer of Western Kentucky University interviews Dr. Lynn Clark regarding his work training parents about behavioral therapy with children.
Hi, this is Dr. Tammy Schaefer with the Talley Family Counseling Clinic at Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Today with me is Dr. Lynn Clark, the author of SOS Help for Parents and the SOS Parenting Program. He is a clinical psychologist who lives in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and he's a professor emeritus of psychology from WKU and has taught as an adjunct at Boston University. He has extensive professional experience in community mental health centers, hospitals, counseling centers, and community agencies, and is listed in the National Register of Health Service Providers in Psychology. He's also a parent and has used all the methods of behavior management in the SOS program with his own two sons, and I look forward to hearing more about that. Welcome, Dr. Clark.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and what we'll be talking about is using behavior therapy and SOS Help for Parents program to help parents and children. This podcast will focus on behavior therapy methods and techniques for helping children 2 to 12 years old. Now, I hope that the podcast will prompt counselors listening to this interview to work toward acquiring increased skills and techniques in behavior therapy. Behavior therapy is extremely useful, and I feel is the most useful of the techniques for helping children. It's exciting to use because it works so well. When we talk about behavior therapy in the next minutes, it would be helpful for the listener to get a PDF visual handout of some of the things that we're going to talk about, some of the techniques. So if you would go to sosprograms.com, look for free resources, these are PDFs, and then download evidence-based behavior therapy SOS interventions. And this will help you to even focus more as you listen to this presentation.
And I encourage you to go get the handout. It is useful, and we'll wait for you. Hit the pause button.
The website also provides sosprograms.com, provides many video and audio clips of major behavior therapy methods, including timeout, response cost, logical, natural consequences, and so forth. Behavior therapy is the most evidence-based of all the therapy approaches for helping children. The focus is on behavior itself, on what are the antecedents, what events occur prior to the problem behavior occurring, and the consequences. After the behavior occurs, what happens? Does the child get accidentally reinforced for that behavior? Or what does happen? Because the consequences primarily determine if this behavior is going to increase in frequency or not.
One of the things that I find interesting is you talk about the fact that there's been tons of research, and I'm quoting you there, on using behavior therapy in children. Can you talk just real briefly about the history of that in terms of where are we at today versus the days when we told a child to go get a stick and they were going to be swatted with the stick?
Well, the research is there's just thousands of studies that have come out, evidence-based, data-based. In the early 60s, was the beginning of behavior therapy, and I was a student at the University of Kansas, one of the four leading centers for behavior therapy, and so I got in on the ground floor of behavior therapy. In fact, one of the professors there Dr. Wolf coined the term for the first time, time out. And he wrote a journal article on the impact of this procedure on handling decreasing certain behaviors in a child with autistic disorder. So this is the first recorded journal article about 1965. So University of Kansas was one of the first institutions to produce a lot of research in this area, and I followed it up since then.
Wow. So it's not new.
It sure isn't. There's some major points. Generally, the counselor does not do behavior therapy directly with the child. Remember, we're talking about children 2 to 12 years old. The counselor uses behavior therapy to help parents and other helping professionals, including teachers, to help improve the behavior of children. Now, this may be somewhat of a disappointment to some counselors who want to start discovering the best techniques and using with the child in a one-to-one relationship. But let me emphasize that you will act as a consultant to the parent. You will provide them with education and insight into what the causes of their child behavior are. Now, as a counselor, you will be interested in one-to-one counseling with the child. Do keep doing that, but use the 50-50 model. The 50-50 model is you spend half of your time with the child in talking therapy, perhaps play therapy, but then you spend 50% of your time with the parent in solving behavior problems, because it could be the parent is accidentally reinforcing all sorts of problem behavior in the child. You want to help the parent understand that and stop doing it.
Would you work with the child first or the parent first during that session?
On evaluation, the first two interviews, I tend to want to see the parent first. In fact, in some cases, I've worked only with the parent.
Okay.
But most people are, in most cases, they're not going to be comfortable doing that. But you begin with the parent. You get a description of the target behaviors. Target behaviors are behaviors you want to increase or decrease. And then you're going to have the parent describe those behaviors, a particular behavior that happened at a particular time, and then tell you about what led up to the behavior and what happened after the child demonstrated that behavior.
Okay, so before we get into a little bit more detail about increasing or decreasing a behavior, what is usually the response when the parents find out that you want to work with them? You're not just going to fix little Johnny or Susie, but that the parents are involved.
Well, we've all had experience with the parents wanting to leave the child off for counseling and therapy. And they'll be back after they do shopping and pick up the child later. And this is a real problem. The parents, if they believe you're going to work primarily with them, and the SOS method, the behavior therapy method, you'll be working more directly with the parent. Again, I'd urge you go to the website, sosprograms.com, or more background material on how to do this, and a number of other PDF downloads. The parent will feel defensive, like you're blaming them for the child's problem, and so that is a counseling challenge. You'll have to deal with that, and how do I handle that? I will tell the parents that quite often children accidentally learn certain problem behaviors. But we don't always know why they develop this problem behavior. But the best way to help your child to improve his or her behavior is to understand why the child's behaving this way, what type of rewards the child might be getting for this problem behavior, and what the parent can do about it. But the solution's primarily within you, the parent. But we don't always know why children have developed this behavior problem. Now, sometimes I really think I do know. It's been the parents have been accidentally rewarding problem behavior, failing to reward the adaptive behavior. But when I talk directly with parents, I'll say more, we don't know exactly how this behavior started, but I think that that we can change it.
Okay, and changing the behavior and modifying what the child is doing, do you concern yourself very much with why they're doing it, or do you just focus on changing the outcome?
Why is the child having a tantrum for a candy bar at the grocery store? I'm going to look at the consequence of that. So the behavior is he's having a tantrum in the checkout line, and then the consequence quite often is the child gets the candy bar. Now, the child may also get a scolding and then get the candy bar. That's called a split reinforcer. They get both a reward and a mild punishment. So I'm going to look primarily at the consequence, what happens following the behavior. And the SOS program's website has several downloads that help you to pinpoint those techniques that you can use to help to identify the consequences of the child's behavior, which actually are the causes of the child's problem behavior. Let me mention some major behavior management rules and techniques. If you go to the handout PDF, Evidence-Based Behavior Therapy SOS Interventions, you will find about 40 methods. This is a clinician's toolbox of interventions for improving a child's behavior. There's three rules. The first rule is reward good behavior and do it quickly and often. Now, we're talking about positive reinforcement of appropriate behavior. There's three types of rewards: social rewards, praise, descriptive praise, activity rewards and privileges, and material rewards. Now, these are very powerful consequences in determining if the child will continue the behavior. There's a number of other techniques and methods in this category, including token rewards, rewarding the good alternative behavior. Instead of rewarding the bad behavior, you identify what's opposite. If whining, the child usually whines for something he wants at home, the alternative behavior is asking in a grown-up voice. So what you want to do is not reward the whining, but do reward asking in a grown-up voice, which is the good alternative behavior.
But you don't necessarily punish the whining. You instead reward the positive communication, speaking appropriately, right tone of voice, and having a good attitude.
That's right. And that brings us to the second set of techniques that will decrease behavior problems, and that's don't accidentally reward the bad behavior. And this is also called extinction of inappropriate behavior. That is, you don't use punishment, you don't use rewards, you simply identify the reward the child's going after with his bad behavior, and you do not reward it. Let's go back to that example with the child having a temper tantrum in the checkout line at the grocery store. The way you use Rule 2, you simply don't reward it. In using Rule 2, don't accidentally reward the bad behavior, you identify which of the three rewards your child is usually going after.
Okay, and that's the social reward.
Yes.
Being able to do an activity.
Or a material reward, like a candy bar. Okay. If a child wants to stay up late at night and has a tantrum to stay up late, that would be an activity or privilege reward that she's going after. Now, your task as a counselor is to help the parents identify those three types of rewards the child is going after with his bad behavior in order to get one of those rewards.
Let me ask you, Because it sounds simple. I'm sitting here listening to you, nodding my head, saying, okay, I can hang with that. But I'm picturing a lot of folks, including myself on some occasions, working really hard to try to figure out what the kid wants and not having a clue. So what would be the process?
Okay, I think that the older the child, the more you can see what they want. They usually are going to be very upset and want this thing from you and that you are withholding it. In some more complicated cases, you use reflective listening, also called active listening, to better understand what the child wants. And in fact, that's an excellent technique, a counseling technique. But generally, you can identify, or you should strive to help the parent identify, one of these three rewards the child's bad behavior is forcing from you. So, rule two, don't accidentally reward bad behavior. What you do, you withhold the social reward, activity reward, or material reward that your child's bad behavior is demanding from you. One way to do that is active ignoring. You just simply don't respond and you turn your attention to something else. There's a third major category of methods that will decrease behavior problems in general, and that's to correct some bad behavior. It's important to use mild correction only. Now, this used to be called mild punishment of inappropriate behavior. Counselors and parents don't like that word, punishment. So I have, it is now correction. And the big five methods of mild correction. Now, let me also mention that there is a DVD video training program described at sosprograms.com that teaches parents these some 40 techniques. And counselors and educators can use this program to help parents to identify when their child is demonstrating these demonstrating behavior problems, and it demonstrates the techniques and methods for correcting behavior and improving it. Well, the big five, a mild correction. Timeout is one. But now I found that there's nine errors that parents make when they use timeout. If you make more than two or three of these nine errors, timeout is not expected to work. You can download a PDF at that website describing the nine errors. For example, not using a wind-up timer, not using 10 words and 10 seconds or less in getting the child to time out, talking to the child after the child's in time out, using the child's bedroom as a place for time out.
Well, that's where all the cool stuff is.
That's right. Children have all sorts of toys in the bedroom. So it turns out the most often recommended place is the bathroom or another boring room. But the worst place is the child's bedroom. There's also variations of timeout. There's timeout for two children who misbehave. Timeout for toys involved in misbehavior. Half of the time when children are misbehaving alone or with another child, a toy is involved. They're not sharing a toy. They're fussing over a toy. They're damaging furniture with the toy. And so what you do, if the toy misbehaves, you put the toy in timeout, 10 words or less, 10 seconds or less, and you set the timer generally for 20 minutes. For little children and small toys, the top of the refrigerator is excellent. So the toy goes into timeout. It gets another chance later. If it misbehaves again, then back in timeout it goes. You'll be surprised how toys shape up their behavior after they've been in timeout a couple times.
I like that idea. Very creative.
And I would recommend if you're starting timeout with a child, you have a client, the child is 2, 3, 4, begin teaching the parents timeout using timeout for toys method.
And I know you mentioned 20 minutes timeout for the toy. Do you have any guidelines if I was going to send my 10-year-old to timeout? Do you recommend a length of time?
Yeah, 1 minute for each year of age, regardless of the bad behavior of your child. It's always 1 minute for each year of age. And research has shown that if you vary that time, that timeout becomes less effective. And what's most important is getting the child to timeout with 10 seconds or less, 10 words or less on the father's part. So that's what's important, is the immediacy.
You know, we're sitting here talking about timeouts, and it's making me think of Super Nanny. I'm a big Joe fan. How about you?
Yes, I'm really a fan of Super Nanny. I like to. She does a better job than 98% of us counselors could do with these families and children. She's excellent. Now, she has two weak areas. I'd like to talk to her sometime. And the first, she doesn't do a good job of timeout. She doesn't use a timer, a large chair for a child 2 to 4 for a timeout chair. She doesn't use getting the child there in 10 seconds or 10 words or less. So she really needs help, we all do as counselors, in using timeout. Another weakness is her using grandma's rule. First, you do the unpleasant task, and then you get to do the pleasant thing that you want to do. First, you eat your green beans, and if you do, then, or most of your green beans, then you get dessert. You don't nag the child to finish his green beans. Super Nanny does have a habit of struggling with the parents and the child with meals, for example. And Grandma's rule also is after you pick up the clothes on the floor, then you get to watch TV. Now, you can wait. You can pick up your clothes an hour or two from now if you want to, but no TV until you finish picking up your clothes. You don't do too complex of a task, usually, with Grandma's rule. If the room of the child is really in a mess, you don't say, clean your whole room up before TV. That's expecting a little bit much.
So where would you start? The room is a tornado has hit the room. Where would you start?
I would help the child start cleaning the room, straightening the room. You have to use clear language. Please put everything away that's out in your room. And then Daddy will take you to the mall to meet your friends, say for a 14-year-old. Now you can clean your room now or later, and I'll take you after your room is clean. So I might help her announce in advance that this is the rule. And this is called Grandma's Rule, or technically called the Premack Principle, named after Dr. Premack, did research on it.
So it sounds like choices are important, even for children.
That's right.
But yet it's a choice that the parent can live with.
That's right. That's very important. Now, we talked about there's five methods, major methods, for decreasing behavior that involve mild correction. Timeout is the first one. There's many variations. Scolding and disapproval is one of the major methods. It's very important to demonstrate low level of emotion, don't demonstrate anger, and use few words when you show disapproval or mild scolding. If you are angry and are scolding and showing disapproval, that will intensify your child's upsetness, and you've got a real problem on your hands. Few words and low emotion. Also, the rule for each disapproving remark that you make with your child, make 5 positive remarks. So that's the 5-to-1 rule, 5 positives for every negative. The third major method is natural consequences. For example, if a child picks up a cat by the tail and gets scratched, that's nature delivering the punishment. Note, the parent permits a natural consequence, but does not implement a natural consequence. And logical consequences. The parent does implement the consequence. For example, a three-year-old draws on the wall. The three-year-old has to help wash off the drawing, and that's a logical consequence.
Okay. Can you compare that to, I was reviewing some of your materials, and you talked about a logical consequence, and you also talk about behavior penalties.
Okay, the fifth major method for decreasing behaviors is called behavior penalty, better known as response cost in behavior therapy literature. And, of course, all of these techniques are taught in SOS Help for Parents book and the DVD. But behavior penalty is where if a boy teases his little sister, then no TV the rest of that night. Now, you note there's no logical relationship between teasing his sister and no TV that night. So in that case, if there's no logical connection and the parent implements it, then it is called behavior penalty. My son, when he was about 10, came to me one time and said, "Dad, let's use no bike riding the rest of the day rather than no TV the rest of the day, because I might use one of those for a behavior penalty." Well, I knew right away which one he most didn't want, and that was the one I used, no TV the rest of the night. But you would never say all week long, just that day. So the penalty has to be immediate and really short-lived.
Short-lived. Okay, so let me give you an example. The other day, my daughter got a bad grade on the test, and I asked her what happened. So we talked about why she didn't get the good grade, and I asked her, "What do you think the consequence should be?" And she said, "Well, no phone calls." And she's 10, social butterfly on the phone. And I said, "Well, okay, for how long?" And she said, "A week." And I thought about it for a few minutes. I said, "Well, why don't I spot you 4 days? We'll do 4 days." But from what you're saying, that might be not as effective because it's too long?
That might be okay. See, usually it's the parent that threatens. I know one mother threatened all summer long the child couldn't watch TV. Well, that's absurd.
And hard to enforce.
Yes, and you got to have an enforceable but mild behavior penalty. I'd say 2, 3, 4 days. That would have been enough for your daughter. I wouldn't object to that. But it must be immediate, enforceable, and mild. That's what is really important. Now, the real task as a counselor is helping parents to design a program for improving the child's behavior. And when do you use timeout versus natural consequences versus behavior penalty? That's the task for the counselor to know. And the counselor really needs to know these techniques really well. Now, the best way, let's say you're meeting as a counselor, you're meeting with the parent, and the child has a behavior problem. Let me talk about a technique to use, a specific technique. If you go to sosprograms.com and download ABC Assessment and Modification of One Problem Behavior, that talks about the ABCs of assessment and behavior change. Now, you need to sit with a parent and have them to describe the last tantrum that their child had, and have them give you a day it occurred. You want them to first describe B. Tell me, what was your child's behavior? What did he do? Remember the best single example that you can, and slowly describe that behavior.
And you want a single behavior,
single
not a
behavior.
Whole stew of complaints.
That's right. We don't want the last four tantrums, a composite of the last four, one particular tantrum. Okay, that's the first thing you do. And then you do the C, the consequence. What did you do after his behavior occurred? What happened next? Walk me through. So I want to know what the parent did following the child's tantrum. Did the mother give in and let the child stay up late and watch television because of the tantrum? If so, that would be an activity reward for the tantrum and also a social reward. The parent gave the child power and authority, and that's a social reward for that child.
Would that be an example of accidentally rewarding negative behavior?
That's right. So that's my favorite error. There are four major errors we can look at in a couple minutes. And that is error three, accidentally rewarding bad behavior. And I think most behavior problems are caused by accidentally rewarding the bad behavior. I could give you 100 examples of that. It's very common. So you first ask, in doing the ABCs, you first go after the B, what's the behavior? Then you go after C, what's the consequence? And then you go after A, the antecedent. What led up to this tantrum? What was going on just before your daughter had that tantrum? Slowly walk me through. Okay, these are the steps in this order. This is a very powerful technique. Now, I always take notes in the interview. So you'll want to take notes, download this PDF, look it over, and then take notes and use this plan. Let me also mention, this is an excellent, the ABC assessment modification is excellent when you act as a consultant to teachers as well. They'll come in with a problem behavior, and then you go ahead and do this ABC assessment. And what's really great about this ABC assessment is that you have built in a plan for modifying the problem behavior of the child because the solution starts to jump out at you.
Okay. Do you have on your website, are there some forms to help new counselors or teachers working with students through this ABC process?
Yes, there are. So they should go down to helping children 2 to 12, and they can download these PDFs, and there's all sorts of resources on the website. Let me mention the four biggest parenting errors that will cause little DSM disorders in children and will cause oppositional and defiant behavior, will increase ADHD problems, will increase all sorts of problem behaviors. Error one, parents fail to reward good behavior. Two, parents accidentally correct or punish good behavior. That also happens. We've talked about my favorite, error three, parents accidentally reward bad behavior. And four, parents fail to correct bad behavior when mild correction is indicated. Big brother hits little sister. That behavior requires mild correction. In fact, the two primary target behaviors as a counselor that you should address first when you work with parents is aggression, that's one, and noncompliance. Those are the two big problems.
Let me ask you a question. You talked about a parent needing to intervene if a child is aggressive with a sibling and hits the sibling. Let's hypothesize the sibling that was hit hits back, which is a logical consequence. You hit someone, you get hit back. Playing devil's advocate here, why should a parent step in?
Half the time, the children will be involved in something like a toy they're competing with, like watching TV or something, not sharing a toy. You put the toy in timeout. So that'd be an excellent case for timeout for the toy. Timeout for two would also be an excellent example. When most of the time, you're going to be unsure who started it. In fact, a bright child can often really make it look like it's the other child started it. So with timeout for two, you don't have to know who started it, who's mostly at blame. They both go to timeout. How long is the timeout? For a 6- and 8-year-old, 7 minutes. That's their average age.
Oh, so you split the difference.
You split the difference. Always 7 minutes, and you set one timer, separate rooms. So behavior therapy, these techniques are very specific. I've identified over 19 absolutely essential techniques. And on this PDF handout, there's over 40 methods listed. Counselors really need to know these methods. Counseling programs need to teach these behavior therapy methods to their students. They're very specific methods. They're research-based. They're fun to use because they are so effective. And let me emphasize again the 50-50 model as you are working with parents and children to help the child with emotional problems or behavior problems. The 50-50 method is you spend 50% of your time with the child, one-to-one, perhaps counseling, play therapy. Then you spend 50% of your time with the parent. Now, the younger the child, the more time you spend with the parent. The older the child, then the less time you spend with the parent, the greater proportion of time that you would spend with the child who's 10 or 12.
Now, do you sometimes combine them, or is it pretty separate, child, parents, but not together in the same session?
The conjoint family therapy is another approach. I would say that if the student's been taught to do this, go ahead and do that also. I would tend to favor on each session, once a week session, however, you spend some time just with the parent or the parents. So that's the main thrust I would like to make.
And then I have one more question. I know we're about out of time here. You mentioned earlier that one of the common errors is punishing a good behavior. Can you give us an example?
Yes. Let's say girl says to mother, "Look, mother, I did all the dishes for you." And mother's not expecting it. And mother looks around and says, "Well, yes, you did, but what about all those pots and pans on the stove?" So that would be an example of accidentally correcting the good behavior.
Maybe also straightening up the bed after they've made it because it's not up to your standards.
That's right. And then you say, "You know, you really didn't do a very good job on that. And you need to try harder."
I know you've got some upcoming projects going on. Can you tell us a little bit about what we might see or hear from you in the future?
Yeah, well, one, I hope to put both of my books on Kindle for audio program, and also the new Kindle. It has speech, so it will speak the words.
Okay.
And a biggest project, I've written another book, SOS Help for Emotions. It's cognitive behavior therapy, endorsed by Albert Ellis. It's very different from behavior therapy. It's for adults, to help adults. It's also a primer for the counselor in cognitive behavior therapy. And I will be producing a DVD program that you can train parents, adults, teenagers in how self-talk and beliefs primarily cause emotional upsetness and not the bad event.
Perception is so important, isn't it?
It really is. And what you tell yourself about some bad event or insult, or teens, you hear them, they get some kind of indication of lack of respect, and then they feel they have to retaliate, when in fact it's not the lack of respect someone might give them, but it's the teen demanding the person must not have said that. And it's demanding it and believing it that must not have been said. That's what gets the teen really angry and upset, not the the insult.
And so much of what we think determines, and I agree with you, determines how we feel. I know for me, I love trains. And I've used this example in my classes several times. I'm fascinated by trains. I'm the one that if I cross a track and I see a train's coming, I will turn around, if possible, to get back to the track so I can watch the train go by. The stereo goes off, the windows go down, whereas other people get very irritated by trains because it delays them. They're in a hurry. They want to be someplace, whereas I find it very enjoyable to stop and watch the train go by. So it illustrates that good.
Yes, I really enjoy trains, too. I've traveled around Europe. I taught a year in Germany, and my family and I traveled all over Europe. Let me also mention that I brought a timer along on the trains, and we use timeout on the train, too.
Okay, so it's very portable.
It really is. A wind-up timer is. So behavior therapy, I've used all these methods with my children for many years. I helped many parents. Helping parents to solve very minor behavior problems to severe behavior problems.
And I like the idea of having a child learn how to make some choices, because the choices they make as children, the consequences are not likely severe, versus as older adolescents who are deciding whether to get in a car when they've been drinking or not, the consequences are potentially lethal. So it's so good to start when they're young.
I like this is, I kind of see as a talking technique I would have parents use. Now, was this behavior, what you did, was that a good choice or not a good choice? What would have been a better choice? And so that's a very powerful technique I would add into these methods.
It certainly is, and there's so much more to discover. Again, I encourage you to go to Dr. Clark's website. Will you give us that address one more time?
SOSprograms.com for video audio clips of behavior therapy.
Again, I encourage you to visit the site, learn more. Again, this is Dr. Tammy Schaefer at Western Kentucky University with Dr. Lynn Clark. Thank you for your time.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. Lynn Clark on behavioral therapy techniques with children. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.